Are you ready to experience something extraordinary? Cultural gems in Croatia, ancient temples in Asia, art in Italy. We'll take care of everything. Flights, accommodation, excursions, local guides and all that planning. Travel department. Let's see more.
Well, hello there, and welcome to another Senior Times Woman to Woman podcast with me, Mairead Robinson. Now, like me, throughout this podcast series, many of you have enjoyed listening to women from all walks of life discussing their work, their experiences, and their hopes and dreams. But I have never had the pleasure of chatting with an internationally renowned singer and actress for this series, until today, that is. And I'm delighted to welcome Camila Grischel, who was born in Sweden, speaks several languages, and is now a resident of West Cork for the past 20 years. Camila sings pop music, opera, jazz, and South American folk. And I'm fascinated to hear all about her incredible career over the past few decades. So Camila, you're very welcome, and thank you for joining me today. And with over 30 years' experience as a singer and performer, will you tell me how it all began?
Hello, Mairead, and thank you for having me on your lovely podcast. Yes, yes, a long career at this point. I suppose my singing really started very young. I used to be wheeled out for parents' parties and things like that, and found very early on, around age 5, 6, that it was a very powerful thing to be doing.
Of course,
I could make old men cry at age 5. That was very powerful.
So was it in the family? Were your parents singers or performers?
No, they weren't. My mom is a teacher and later a speech therapist. But as a teacher, she would play the piano and sing in school. That was the rigueur in those days. So she had a bit of piano and she liked singing, but no one was a musician. My father was a social worker. So there was a lot of people around us always and a lot of children.
Yes. But
not really. There was no other musicians in the family. No, no.
Did you always want to be a performer when you grew up? When you were a little girl, what did you dream about doing?
I suppose I did, you know, like I've just gone through loads of old photographs and looking at my sister, Marika, and I have two older sisters, and my middle sister and I, we used to always dress up like you do when you're a young girl.
Sure.
But that was always something I really enjoyed. And then I auditioned to go to this music school at age 10 after my teacher said I should definitely do that. So I went into this school called Adolf Fredriks Music School in Stockholm. And that was a wonderful experience. From age 10, I was in with loads of other children with, you know, that were musical, that had musical abilities and talents. And it was a real privilege to be with 30 children every day. And we sang together every day and did loads of concerts. So it started early for me, I suppose, the performing, mostly with other people. And then, as I say, being wheeled out ever so often for parties and stuff like that. So, yeah.
You joined a pop group, didn't you, when you were a teenager?
I was a little bit more than a teenager. I was living in Verbier in Switzerland, singing in a piano bar at night and skiing all day long. And someone spotted me and thought I should come to Norway to do an audition for this pop group that was called One Too Many. And so I did. I went over there and I got the job, basically. And 2 weeks later, I was living in London recording an album with this group. So all a bit of a fairy tale.
Yeah, absolutely. Did they write their own stuff or did they do mainly covers?
Yes.
They wrote their own
stuff? No, that was they had already recorded a sort of a demo and then the singer had left. It's a long story, but suffice it to say, I was wheeled in again at a late date, and I sang these songs that were already written. There was one new song that hadn't been recorded yet, so that was my audition. In fact, audition that I did in Norway was actually on the album. But we, you know, I had done some recording, not much, and then coming to London, we were in a very Mayfair studios, and next door to us were the Bee Gees recording, and I was 22 years old. Trying to be cool, you know, we had Michael Jackson's backing vocalist come in because they put a lot of effort into this record. They had big hopes for it, A&M Records this was. And so we had, you know, Sheryl Crow was my backing vocalist. She was touring with Michael Jackson at the time. So it was a lot of amazing things came to do my backing vocals. It was really scary and really stressful. And like I say, I was trying very hard to be cool, but it was a tough journey, even though it sounds like a fairy tale, because there was I lost a lot of confidence. I used to sing, like I said, from an early age, but this experience was just trying to keep your cool, and it's a whole new world and a very harsh world as well, if you're not ready for it, you know, if you're quite naive, you know, I learned a lot. Absolutely.
I can imagine. I mean, we're talking what, back in the 80s, is it?
Yeah, 80s. Yeah. 88 this was that I moved to London. You know, and I met my husband then he was signed to the same record company, A&M Records, Colin Burncombe, the artist's name was Black. So we met, and that was a very grounding experience. And after about a year of meeting him, I kind of decided that I wanted to follow my dream and sing opera, which I'd always wanted to do. So I left the group, which was good for me, because it was that kind of music business carry on that many people get kind of damaged by in a way, because I was so naive. I had no idea what was going on. And I just didn't feel happy after 3-4 months doing that. It wasn't what I had kind of wished for as a singer or a performer. So I was glad to leave it, even though the record company wanted to do more. And I just thought, no, this is enough. I need to protect myself, you know.
I think I can understand that, of the whole rock and roll lifestyle back in the 80s, you know, it wasn't easy. Yeah. But I was interested to hear that you went from, you know, the successful pop band into opera. And I thought, actually, that's what Freddie Mercury did. Freddie Mercury, who sang with Queen.
Yeah.
Remember then he recorded that wonderful song Barcelona with Montserrat Caballo. That was absolutely wonderful. And he, like you, had this dream of singing opera, even though he was in a very successful pop group. So, there is obviously a natural kind of transition there.
Well, there was also the wish to really develop my voice. As I said, I went to this music school, and as a treat, twice a year, we got to go to the opera. And I remember not liking all of it. I was just fascinated by it. It made me cry. It really moved me. So when I first started to learn and practice, some operatic arias, for instance, I'd have to listen to them, I don't know, so many times so I could actually sing them, because every time I started singing them, it made me cry. It meant so much to me at the time. I really loved it, you know. I really, really loved it, and I still do love it. My trajectory became more doing kind of odd projects. Like I performed in the first ever Yiddish opera, for instance, in Israel. I'd gone over there to do a course with the Metropolitan Opera. They put a month-long course on every year in Tel Aviv, and I was lucky to get on that. And from there, I met some people that wanted to put on this opera called the Dibuk, which was a very modern opera. So that was interesting. So I've done that, and I've done like Maria de Buenos Aires, a tango opera. I've done kind of odd opera. I've done other things too, like, you know, a lot of Mozart, but it became more pertinent to me to keep growing and keep learning and doing kind of odd things that challenged me, I suppose, you know. And also during all this time, I became a mother. And so I put most of my efforts into that, but I kept on singing, of course, but I was very lucky to be able to be a stay-at-home mom, you know. So
where did you perform mainly when you were singing opera? Like, what countries were you particularly in?
Mainly in England, and then, like I say, in Tel Aviv. I did some work in New York, but that was very brief. So it was mainly in London, really, and then also some in Sweden. I did quite a lot of oratorio work, so the Messiah and things like that as a soloist. Wonderful. And then I did a lot of recital work as well. So places like St. Martin in the Fields and St. John Smith Square and places like that I would have performed.
So there was plenty of work around in the opera world, obviously.
I wouldn't say that. So the main opera work that I got was smaller companies, but there was that. There were a lot of smaller opera companies around London, which with my sort of mothering kind of main part, was able to do that wasn't as taxing as having to. I found that the auditioning and going in and putting all your heart and soul into something, and sometimes it was just about if you fit in last year's costumes, or you know, it was like people didn't even look at you auditioning. I found it very soul destroying as well. So bit by bit, I kind of got more into the art song and doing recitals and choosing my own repertoire and putting on my own concerts, because that was more feasible as a mother as well.
Sponsored by Expressway. With My Expressway, free travel pass holders can reserve their seats online at expressway.ie or at our ticket machines in stations.
Are you interested in trying a new smartphone but still a little unsure? Do you want a phone that offers larger icons with louder sound and an interface that has technology designed for seniors? Well, why not choose from the Doro range by simply visiting doro.ie. Doro, make friends with innovation.
Were you living in London at that time?
Yes, we were. We lived in London until 2003, by which time I had three children, and I had said to my husband that if we have children, when we have children, if we're lucky, I really don't want to be in London, because I grew up outside Stockholm by a lake. It was only like 10, 15 minutes outside, but I was always outside, and I really, really wanted that for my children too. So living in London, there's a lot of sitting in cars or sitting in queues, and you can't really let anyone out and be free. So like finally in 2003, just after I'd been to Peru actually to record an album there, I took my 10-month-old's youngest son with me and recorded an album, which is an incredibly beautiful experience. I really loved it, and I'm really into that whole, for some reason, Spanish, singing in Spanish, and it releases something, my Swedish shyness or my Swedish reserve or something. When I'm singing in Spanish, I'm like a completely different. So I was really getting into that and then performing over there. But when we came back then, we moved to Ireland, and a great, great journey. So our eldest son was 11, our youngest was one. And there was one there in the middle. It was 3.5, 4.5. And we took all our stuff and we moved over to Skull. People have said, if you want to live like in Ireland, you should check out West Cork. And Ireland was because we'd been once and really loved it in Inishbofin to celebrate my husband's manager's birthday one time. And I just felt so at home there. I just really felt part of the land somehow. And I just kind of felt at home, like I also did in Peru. Something happens, I don't know what it is, but is it past lives? I'm not sure what it is, but it was very poignant that I felt very at home here.
Well, West Cork is pretty special. So how about the boys then? Obviously you had to get them into school and all of that. Do they enjoy or did they enjoy growing up there and going to school there?
Oh my God. Yeah, so I have my eldest son is now, what is he now, 32. He also has two sons now. There's a lot of boys around me. And the other two, they basically, that's what they know. They're more West Cork, I think, than West Cork people themselves. You know, that's all they really know. And they all love Ireland. You know, they really, really do. Yeah. My eldest son is still based in West Cork with his children. And the other two in Cork and Inishannon, but they all come back all the time, you know, to visit. So they had a beautiful childhood there, you know, it was completely different.
Well, it's such a healthy and lovely place to grow up, isn't it?
It's wonderful. It is. And so many, it's a lovely community, very mixed community as well. And I think locals and Blowens, we get on very well with each other. You know, I think that's... So I kind of heard, when I first arrived, heard the term Blowin, which could be someone from Skibbereen and Skull as well, you know what I mean?
Oh, I know all about it, yes.
Yeah, I kind of heard it a bit like a derogatory term. And then a friend of mine said, no, think about it as the Blowin can also be what the sea brings in to fertilize the land. So I've always kind of looked upon it like
that's
that.
A good way of putting it, yeah. I like that.
But it was wonderful to arrive from London, which can be so impersonal. And to arrive in a small community and be part of a community, it's very much what's formed what I'm doing now with my show Mama Song, and the community is I think in this world that is now so broken, and we can see how broken it's always been broken, but now we can all see it on our you're on our phones. It never stops, you know, if you choose to do that. So we have to remind ourselves that really, I feel like to nurture our communities is one of the most important things we can do for ourselves and you know, for what's coming next.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful that you're still performing. And you performed down in West Cork in Ballydehob there recently, didn't you?
That's right. I had performed I went to do a master's degree in the Cork School of Music, which is, oh, what a beautiful facility and fantastic time to go in and do a master's degree at that age when you know exactly what you want to do. So that was the start of creating this of this show. That was the kind of the bones of it started there. And it's something I wanted to do for a long, long time anyway, pretty much since I was a child. Again, you know, putting together music, that it's the most important thing for me as a performer is the connection, you know.
Of course.
The connection with people in on the stage with me and the connection with the people in the room or the auditorium, wherever I am, in the pub, you know, wherever I am singing, that's the most important. That's the whole idea of it for me, that's what I love. So anyway, this show was being created, and then I got my musicians together. So these people I've worked with there for the last, some of them for over 30 years and most of them for 20 years. So we got together and workshopped this down in West Cork, which became the show that we then performed in the Everyman in 2018. And then we carried on performing it, and then COVID came. So over the COVID years, I had time to rewrite it and kind of get more to the essence of it, what I wanted to say with it, really. And then we were going to perform it in a space in Skibbereen that was being renovated, and they never finished the renovation. It went on and on and on. So we decided to go into the Grouse Lodge Studios in Westmeath and record it. So we recorded this, the whole album, which is 25 tracks with spoken word.
Did you write the tracks yourself?
So there's a couple of songs in there that I wrote. There are two other songs that one was written while we were workshopping by the beautiful bass player Conco Denkabinde from South America. So I have an amazing world-class band of musicians. They're incredible. I'm really, wonderful. Really lucky to work with them. And the show could not work without these people. So this Conco Denkabinde, he wrote a song especially for the show. And Newell Tsumbo, who is a Congolese guitarist and very much on up and rising at the moment. He's just touring in America with Rhiannon Giddens and the Silk Road Project. He's an incredible musician, but lives in the Shannon. So we're quite near each other. Yeah.
It's wonderful to have that talent and those connections on your doorstep, isn't it?
Oh, my God. It's invaluable, really. And like I say, this Mama Song wouldn't be what it is without those guys.
Where did the name Mama Song come from?
So it's sort of started with, like, I sing in six different languages on this album. Mama, because I really want to honor where we all come from. There is an absolute direct connection. We all come from our mother's wombs, wherever we are born in the world. I wanted to honor that the first sounds we hear, and a hearing is the first sense that develops, is your mother's heartbeat. You know?
Yes, of course.
And that's true for all of us in the whole world. You know, I wanted to find something that unified that, you know, and that place that we experience, whether we remember that or not, but there must be something in it, I think. There's warmth there, there is safety there, there is that. So that there's something I feel with also the human voice, you hear your mother's voice, you know, there's something very connecting, even if you don't understand the language, but the human voice can connect us all very quickly. I mean, I, you know, and there's nothing like music for me. Sure. It's like a highway straight into your emotional world. You can be chirpy one second and cry the next one, or vice versa when you hear a song. It's very powerful, you know.
Have you released that as an album, or is this just...
Yes, you have released
the album.
So it's called Mama Song Source, and the source would be, as I was just talking about, where we all come from. So that we released that in conjunction with headlining the Ballydehob, the fantastic Ballydehob Jazz Festival last year. So that is, oh my God, I can't speak enough of that. The Joe and Caroline who started all that, and all the volunteers, it's a real community effort, and they get incredible bands to come and play from all over the world. And it's a real joyful celebration.
That's wonderful. And can people buy this album online or in a record shop?
Yes, you can. Great. So you can go into camillagriesel.com and find it there. You can find it on Spotify if you look up Mama song, Mama Song Source. So it's available on all platforms, basically. Brilliant. You know, yeah. As I said, we recorded that over 2 days, sort of like a live show. So I'm really, really happy with that.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
I love the fact that you sing, and I know you speak several languages, 6 different languages, I think. But it's wonderful that you sing in all those languages as well. That's very unifying.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly. And I have the wealth of my musicians as well that brought... So we have also Eamon Cagney, I must mention, from Donegal. He's a percussionist. And we have a new pianist this time, Johnny Taylor, who lives here in Dublin. But everyone brings something to it. So we all, so the languages I sing in Zulu, which I don't speak, but obviously I know what I'm saying. And because I have the Concord, who speaks Zulu, and Xhosa and several other African languages, I have the wealth of their experience as well. So and then Newell, he speaks Lingala. So there's a song that he wrote that I sing in Lingala. And I love, like I say, I love just having different languages in my mouth, because like I say, it transforms my voice sounds. And so it's a very exciting experience for me to be singing all these languages and experiment many times. But when they work, they work. And some people might think that, you know, why is she singing, you know, she doesn't know these languages. And if it was, you know, and sometimes when you sing in other people's songs, there are a lot of songs, like this song from, for example, from Peru called Cardo Ceniza, which is written and sung by their foremost diva, Chabuca Granda, who was an amazing, amazing lady. And I was so inspired by a lot of singers in South America and Latin America, because again, they are at their peak, you know, at this age. I am 58 years old now, and I'm feeling like, people go, it's great that you're still singing. I feel like I'm only just coming into my own, you know. Like I have the experience now in my voice. I have the experience. I don't worry so much what the people think anymore. It's a wonderful time to be singing for me. You know, I really, really enjoy it. And my role models there, like Chavela Vargas, Tupuga Granda, you know, like I dared to sing this song, Cardo Ceniza, I was saying, and talking about so many things at the same time. But Cardo Ceniza is a very famous song in Peru. And some people got really angry because I sing it very differently. So it's very interesting that I, you know, how dare she sing this song this way? It's very interesting, you know, whereas I would feel if someone took it upon themselves to learn a song in Swedish, I'd just say fair play to you, you know.
That's anyway, wonderful. I could talk to you for ages. I'm really looking forward to hearing the album. We're kind of running out of time, but maybe you will sing us out with a little something from the album. That would be lovely.
Okay, I will do that. There is a song.
Take it away.
Yeah. I thought my problem was an empty bowl until my bowl was filled. I thought my sorrow was having to move until my movement stilled. I thought my fear was of the dark until I turned on the light. I thought that I could do nothing wrong till I did something right.
That's beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure.
And Camilla will be performing Mama Song at the Cork Opera House on Sunday, 12th of May. Tickets are available from corkoperahouse.ie.
An will phone poca nuawet, an will knapi no fum nis orjawet, nis eskele husod, faker na phone intakata gwin, ancho, eg daro, an von klishte is dani, gidi gohan la hai glina, agus taskina, ta rod egen, gogachtina, ta nismo olis, eg, daro.com. An will phone poke a nuawet, an will knappy no fum nis orjawet. Nis eskele husaj, faker na phone eintuk a tall gwyn, an cho, eg daro. An vone klishta is dani, gidi gohan la hai glina, agus taskina. Ta rud egin, gogachtina. Ta nismo olis, eg, daro.com.